Module 2 is Risk Management Foundations. This covers Chapter 2 in the textbook. So let's go ahead and get out our study sheet. And as you can see, we're going to talk about the risk management process, as well as different categories and classifications of risk. We'll talk about different ways that risk can be measured, and we'll talk about some of the benefits of risk management. We'll start, though, by going through the steps of the risk management process, and then we'll talk about different ways that risk can be categorized. And we do have a couple of additional handouts that we'll use that came with your study materials. When we talk about categories of risk, we'll reference those handouts. We'll then talk about objectives and benefits of risk management, and we'll go through various risk measures. So let's start off with the risk management process. The risk management process is a set of interconnected activities. Normally, when we think about a process, we think about a series of steps, and before you can move to step number 2, you have to complete step number 1. The risk management process does have steps, but they don't necessarily go in order, and you can actually perform more than one step simultaneously. So the risk management process is a little bit different than other processes we see in that it's really a set of interconnected activities. I would highlight this for your exam. It defines an organization's holistic approach to managing risks, and please keep in mind that the process differs from organization to organization. The success of the process depends on effective communication and collaboration. And we actually have an entire module, Module 11, dedicated to the communication process and ways of communicating and collaborating effectively. The risk management framework is a foundation for applying the risk management process throughout an organization. Let's take a look at the steps of the risk management process. Keep in mind, though, that these steps are really more of a set of interconnected activities that occur simultaneously. So we can be monitoring and reviewing our existing plan while analyzing risks that could be up and coming risks for our organization. So it's not that we're just going to go from step 1 to step 2 to step 3, step 4, step 5, and then start over again. These are all interconnected. The 5 steps are scan the environment, identify risks, analyze risks, treat the risks, and then monitor and review the plan. And of course, these activities do require communication and collaboration. Let's go through each one of these steps. The first element of the process is scanning the environment. Risk management professionals should conduct a detailed review of the environment, both the internal environment and the external environment. An example of the external environment would be workers' compensation statutes. Risk management professionals should evaluate how each one of an organization's processes aligns with the organization's overall objectives. For example, let's say an organization has an overall objective of improving worker safety. A risk management objective of reducing the number of work injuries would align perfectly with that overall organizational objective. Risk management professionals should collaborate with stakeholders to define risk criteria. And you need to know the definition of risk criteria for your exam. Risk criteria is information used as a basis for measuring the significance of a risk. This criteria should be aligned with the organization's objectives, and it should consider the following factors. Among other factors, it should consider the causes and effects of risk, metrics used to measure effects of risk, and even methods to determine the level of risk. Those are all factors that need to be considered when determining risk criteria. The second element of the process is identifying risks. Risk identification involves developing a list of risks that could affect the organization. It's not feasible or practical to identify all risks, but it is important to identify key risks that are faced by the organization. It's important for the organization to ask the right questions and to find even external experts, in some cases, that can shed light on emerging risks. Methods that can be used to identify risks include document analysis, compliance reviews, inspections, and expertise within and outside the organization. We may need to consult with external experts when identifying risks. Another element of the risk management process is analyzing risks. Risk analysis involves applying the risk criteria that we just discussed to determine the cause, probability, and consequences of each risk. Loss exposures are analyzed based on frequency, severity, amount, and timing, and the analysis itself can be quantitative, qualitative, or even both. With respect to quantitative analysis, that may involve working with experts. For example, let's say that we produce a product at our company, and we've identified the risk of customer injury as a result of product malfunction. Once we've identified that risk, we can talk to an expert to help us quantify the potential cost of litigation if we do have product malfunction. Another element is treating risks, and we're going to talk a lot about treating risks in this particular course. Risks can be addressed through risk control and risk financing techniques. Risk control techniques include risk avoidance, which is just completely avoiding taking on some type of risk. For example, if I'm concerned that I'm going to be in a plane crash, I can avoid that risk by just never getting on a plane. That's risk avoidance. That's a type of risk control technique. Loss reduction is another risk control technique. Risk control techniques minimize the frequency or severity of a loss. We also have risk financing techniques, which includes risk transfer. In other words, transferring the risk to an insurance company through the use of insurance, and even hedging techniques. Those are types of risk financing techniques. In other words, we're figuring out a way to pay for losses if they do occur. With risk control, we're trying to control the loss, minimize its severity or frequency. With risk financing, we're figuring out a way to pay for the loss. It's a way to generate funds to finance our losses. An organization should compare the total level of risk determined during the risk analysis phase with the risk criteria in order to figure out how to best treat risks. There are many different ways that risks can be treated, and selecting the appropriate technique or techniques is based on quantitative and qualitative considerations. The technique should be effective and should be economical as well. And these are the major options for risks. We'll talk briefly about them right now, but we're going to go through these in tremendous detail throughout this course. We have avoidance, which, as I said before, is just not acting in a particular way. In other words, deciding not to take action, specifically avoiding a risk. Like I said, if I am concerned about dying in a plane crash, what I might do is never get on a plane. That's risk avoidance. If I'm concerned that a product my company is producing might injure somebody, the way to prevent the injury completely, to eliminate that risk completely, is by no longer producing that product. That's risk avoidance. We have risk modification. Modification modifies the likelihood or impact of a risk. We have risk transfer, which could use insurance, for example. That's transferring the risk to another party. We have risk retention, which is doing nothing with the risk, just accepting the risk and paying for it. For example, let's say that I have risk at my company that my employees are going to steal some supplies from the supply cabinet. I don't really care. That's not a big risk, small dollars, so I may choose to just retain that risk and not try and transfer it, not try and modify it, not try and avoid it. I may just retain the risk. And there's even exploitation, and this is where a risk could actually result in a profit. For example, purchasing a new business, that could result in losses, of course, that is a risk, but it could also result in tremendous gains. So we also have risk exploitation. Those are different ways to treat risks. And the final element of the risk management process is monitoring and reviewing the plan. Monitoring the plan involves determining the effectiveness of risk controls, obtaining information to approve risk assessments, analyzing events and their consequences, observing changes in the environment, and identifying emerging risks. And this is an ongoing process. So let's do a couple of practice questions. Which one of the following statements is correct regarding an organization's risk management framework? A, it is a foundation for applying the risk management process throughout the organization. That's actually true. That's exactly what we said the risk management framework was. So A is our answer. Let's go ahead and take a look at the rest of the answers, though. It's applied in the same manner in every organization. Now, we said that the risk management process and the risk management framework differ from organization to organization. It's a set of discrete sequential steps. Now, these are simultaneously occurring interconnected activities, not a discrete set of steps. So C is false. D, it can be successfully implemented by a single stakeholder. No, it involves communication and collaboration. D is false, so once again, A is our answer. Making the decision to avoid, transfer, retain, or exploit a risk is a characteristic of which step in the risk management process. And we have risk identification, risk analysis, risk treatment, and risk monitoring. And we said that risk avoidance, transfer, retention, exploitation, those are all methods of risk treatment. So C is our answer. Let's talk about categories of risk. Categorizing risk can help with risk assessment and risk management because many risks can be managed with similar techniques. We're going to talk about different risk classifications. We'll talk about four categories or quadrants of risk. And we do have a couple of additional handouts that we're going to use in this section of this module, as well as in future modules. So let's go ahead and get them both out now. They came with your study guide. The first one is called Classifications of Risk. And then the second one is Risk Quadrants. And so let's get those out and we'll go through those together. And we'll start off by talking about risk classifications. There are different classifications of risk, and the risk could be pure risk, could be speculative. So we have pure and speculative, we have subjective and objective risk, and we have diversifiable and non-diversifiable risk. And if you look, we do have the chart that shows the classifications of risk, and the two main categories are pure and speculative. And then below pure, we've got objective and subjective. And then below speculative, we have objective and subjective. And of course, below objective and subjective, we have diversifiable and non-diversifiable. The classifications are not mutually exclusive, so we can have a risk that's pure, subjective, and non-diversifiable. When it comes to insurance, insurance is usually meant to mitigate risks that have the categories of pure, objective, and diversifiable. I usually use the acronym POD, P-O-D, to remember that. If you notice on your handout, Classifications of Risk, the three red boxes are pure, objective, and diversifiable. Those are the insurable risks. You need to know that for your exam. So an insurable risk is one that's a pure risk, an objective risk, and a diversifiable risk. So let's talk about these different classifications. First, we'll talk about pure and speculative risk. Pure risk is the possibility of loss with no chance of gain. For example, let's say that I purchase a house. The house has a risk of fire. Unfortunately, what could happen there is there's either going to be a fire in which I will suffer a loss, or there'll be no fire, in which case I don't get a gain from having no fire. I just don't have a loss. So with a pure risk, it's either the possibility of a loss or no loss. But with pure risk, there's no possibility, no chance of gain. Insurance is primarily designed for pure risk. Pure, objective, diversifiable, pod. Speculative risk is the possibility of loss, but it also is the possibility of gain. Let's say that you purchase a stock as an investment. You could lose money, but you could also make money as well. That's speculative risk. Speculative risk is affected by other types of risk. It's affected by market risk, which is fluctuations in security prices. It's affected by inflation risk, which is the loss of purchasing power. Price risk, changes in the cost of raw materials and other inputs. Let's say that I'm a manufacturer, and in order to make my inventory, I need sugar. And let's say that the price of sugar goes up, that's going to eat into my profits or maybe even cause me to have a loss. That's price risk, the price of a raw material going up. Also, speculative risk is affected by credit risk. Maybe a customer fails to make a promised payment. Let's say that I'm a lender and I expect to receive payments and interest and my customer defaults on the loan. I have credit risk in that scenario. The risk that a customer fails to make a promised payment or a borrower defaults on their loan. Those are types of speculative risk, or at least those affect speculative risk. Speculative risk is a possibility of gain or loss. What's interesting is that there are some assets that can have both pure risk and speculative risk. For example, if I do buy a house, there's a risk of a fire, and of course, fire risk is pure risk, and of course, that's insurable, but the house itself could increase in value, and I could resell it at a profit, so my house also has speculative risk. Another set of classifications of risk are subjective risk and objective risk. Objective risk is based on fact. And this is a type of risk that's generally insurable. Remember, we said pure risk, objective risk, diversifiable risk. Objective risk is generally insurable. It's based on fact. Subjective risk is perceived risk. It's based on opinion. Subjective risk can exist even where objective risk does not. It's based on the organization, not the risk itself. And different organizations have different risk awareness. Familiarity and control influence this risk. An example of subjective risk is some people have a fear of flying because they believe that flying is dangerous. That's subjective risk. And in that case, subjective risk and objective risk differ greatly because in reality, the objective risk, the facts, indicate that flying is a very safe form of travel. You're more likely to have a problem crossing the street than you are being in a plane crash. So with that said, the objective risk are the facts based on the risk, how dangerous flying really is, and subjective risk is based on opinion. And sometimes those two risks differ greatly. Risk assessment relies on objective facts combined with subjective opinions of the future. A third classification is diversifiable versus non-diversifiable risks. Diversifiable risks only affect one or a small number of people or businesses. The risks tend not to be correlated, and it's the focus of private insurance. And in your study guide, it may say systematic risk is a type of diversifiable risk. That is incorrect, so please cross that out. Sorry about that. But diversifiable risks only affect one or a small number of people or businesses. For example, fire is considered a diversifiable risk. At least from the insurance company's standpoint, if there's a fire that burns your house down, it's likely not going to affect a house one block over, or maybe not even going to affect the house next door. So it's diversifiable from the insurance company's standpoint, and that's why it's a type of insurable risk. Pure, objective, diversifiable. Non-diversifiable risks are correlated, and therefore diversification will not lower the risk. An example of a non-diversifiable risk is inflation. Another example is a natural disaster like a hurricane or a tornado. Unemployment is a type of non-diversifiable risk. This is often the focus of government insurance. There's unemployment insurance, for example. And that does include non-diversifiable risk, does include systemic risk, which is the potential for major disruption in a market, such as the mortgage market. If you remember when the mortgage market collapsed a few years ago, that was an example of systemic risk. That's non-diversifiable risk. Another important way of looking at risks is by dividing them up into the risk quadrants. And this is going to be a major theme for this course going forward, the risk quadrants. We do have a handout called Risk Quadrants. Let's go ahead and get that out. And you're going to want to have that nearby, probably for the rest of this course, because we're going to be focusing on these different risk quadrants. In fact, most of these quadrants have their own separate module in this course. So we have, of course, four quadrants. That's why it's called risk quadrants. Let's take a look at them. The first quadrant is hazard risk. And this is typically what we focus on when we're taking an insurance class. Property risk, like your house burning down, liability risk, like your company getting sued, or personnel loss exposures. Those are all types of hazard risk, and most of those are insurable. We also have operational risk, people risk, process risk, systems risk, external events risk. We have a whole separate module on operational risk. If you notice, those two risks are in the top half of the quadrant, and the reason that they're in the top half is because those represent the pure risks of the quadrant. Hazard and operational are the pure risks. We also have financial risk. We have a separate module on that too. That includes market risk, credit risk, price risk, and we have strategic risk, which involves competition, economic risk, marketing risk, procurement, and regulatory risk. Those two risks, financial and strategic risk, those are types of speculative risk. Those are the risk quadrants. We're going to go through those in detail in this course. So let's look real quick. Once again, pure risk quadrants, which are, of course, generally diversifiable because they're pure risks. Those are the hazard risks and the operational risks. Hazard risks are often transferred through insurance. Operational risks include things like product recall, embezzlement, IT risk. Those arise from people or failure of process. We have the two speculative risk quadrants, and that's the financial risk, which includes liquidity, interest rate, and market risk, and that may be diversifiable or non-diversifiable. And we have finally strategic risk, which includes intellectual property, competitors, ethics, media. Those are generally diversifiable risks, and they arise from trends in the economy or society. So you really want to know the risk quadrants, and we're going to be going through these in detail. So let's do a couple of practice questions. Insurable risks are generally categorized as, and we'll just use our acronym here, POD, pure, objective, and diversifiable. Well, actually, A is the answer. Those are the three categories that apply to insurable risks. Pure, objective, diversifiable. A is our answer. XYZ Battery Company manufactures home appliances. They discovered a defect in their new line of blenders, and management decided to recall all the new blenders. Based on the quadrants of risk, what type of risk does this represent? And we've got the four different risks: hazard, financial, strategic, operational. And in this example, where there's a product defect, that is operational risk. Operational risks are pure risks that could jeopardize business-related functions. And product recall is a type of operational risk. So D is our answer. Let's talk about some of the objectives and benefits associated with risk management. We've been talking so far about holistic risk management, which is also known as enterprise risk management, and these are the objectives and benefits of holistic risk management: tolerable uncertainty, profitability and growth of the organization, compliance with legal and regulatory requirements, social responsibility, the reduced cost of risk, and reduced deterrent effects of hazard risks. Let's go through each one of these individually. These are the objectives and benefits of holistic or enterprise risk management. The first objective is tolerable uncertainty. Very important. You do need to understand what tolerable uncertainty is. You'll probably get a question on the exam about tolerable uncertainty. Defining and maintaining tolerable uncertainty is essential to every enterprise risk management strategy. Tolerable uncertainty involves aligning the organization's risks with the organization's risk appetite. Risk appetite represents the amount of risk an organization is willing to take on. So what we want to do is make sure we're aligning our actual risks with the risks that we're willing to take on, our risk appetite. If we do that, that ensures that whatever happens will be within the bounds of what was anticipated. Risk management programs should use measurements that align with the organization's objectives. There are actually a lot of ways that we can measure risk. We're going to talk about several ways that risks are measured throughout this course. One such measure, which we will also discuss in more detail later, is the concept of value at risk, or VAR. That quantifies financial risk by measuring the probability of losing more than a specified amount. For example, we might do some calculations, and the value at risk might say that we are 99% confident that our losses will not exceed $1 million per day. So we're determining some sort of confidence level of losses not exceeding a certain threshold. If we say that we have a 99% confidence level that our losses will not exceed $1 million per day, unfortunately, there's still a 1% chance that our losses will exceed $1 million in a given day. Unfortunately, with value at risk, it doesn't say how much that loss could exceed the $1 million by. That's one of the weaknesses of value at risk. But still, this is a really good measure, and we will discuss this in a little more detail later. Organizations have various goals and objectives, and those can be satisfied or addressed through tolerable uncertainty analysis. Some of these objectives include reducing downside risk. Tolerable uncertainty can help reduce downside risk. Organizations can use threshold limits to reduce risks. For example, a trigger can alert management when a threshold has been breached. And at that point, when the threshold has been breached, management can discuss any potential changes that need to occur. Another goal of organizations is earnings stability. Organizations may focus on stability of earnings over time rather than striving for the highest possible profits currently. So with tolerable uncertainty, we can use that to help manage our various objectives here, reducing downside risk, an objective of earning stability. We can also use it to help anticipate emerging risks. A risk radar can scan the organization for any emerging risks. And finally, pretty much all organizations have a goal of business continuity. Professionals must have understanding of specific operations for which continuity is essential. These are all goals that we see within many, if not all, organizations. Another objective of holistic risk management is profitability and growth. We mentioned before with traditional risk management that often the objective was to look at losses that have already occurred and determine what the root cause was, or even try to just avoid disaster or minimize the likelihood or severity of losses. With holistic or enterprise risk management, it's not just about avoiding disaster and trying to survive. Holistic risk management should be integrated into an organization's growth strategy. So we can use risk management not just to help minimize losses, but to plan for growth in the organization. And that includes the goal of increasing market share. Risk management aligns with the goal of increasing market share in the following ways: through intelligent, strategic risk-taking. And successful organizations that engage in intelligent strategic risk-taking, they take risks in order to grow. They look at purchasing other businesses in order to grow their own business. So intelligent strategic risk-taking is one way that risk management aligns with the goal of increasing market share. Another way that it aligns is through the identification and management of cross-enterprise risks. Some organizations look at individual risks in a vacuum. For example, some organizations would look at supply chain risks purely as an operational risk. However, supply chain risks could affect other areas, other departments. It could become a financial risk if it affects profitability. So identifying and managing cross-enterprise risks is another way that risk management aligns with the goal of increasing market share. And also improved capital allocation. Utilizing resources appropriately is another way that risk management can align with this goal. Reducing the cost of risk frees up capital for other purposes. Another objective and benefit of risk management is legal and regulatory compliance. Risk management programs should ensure the organization's legal obligations are satisfied. The risk management professional should be aware of organizations' contractual obligations, as well as federal, state, and even local regulations. Obligations are usually based on a standard of care owed to others. That includes the fiduciary standard of care, which we'll talk about later in this course, any contracts entered into by the organization, and even federal and state laws and regulations. Another objective of risk management is social responsibility. Many organizations pursue social responsibility because it enhances the organization's reputation. For example, some organizations like to give a lot to charity because it makes the organization look good in the eyes of the public. This also includes ethical behavior as well as fulfilling obligations to the community. Risk management professionals should consider an organization's societal commitments when developing a risk management program. One of the benefits of enterprise risk management is the potential reduced cost of risk. Enterprise risk management can result in a reduction in the cost of an organization's risk. What is the cost of risk? It's the total cost incurred because of the possibility of accidental loss. That includes the cost of unreimbursed accidental losses, so the loss itself is included in the cost of risk. If we have a fire and our out-of-pocket cost is $100,000, that's our deductible, that's part of the cost of risk. Insurance premiums are another element of the cost of risk. The cost of risk control techniques as well, such as installing video cameras, having security guards monitor our site. The cost of duplication, in other words, backing up our files, those are all risk control techniques that have a cost. And the cost of administering risk management activities, all of these represent the cost of risk. Effective risk management aims to reduce the overall long-term cost to the organization. And the great thing about that is a reduced cost of risk can actually increase the organization's overall profits. Another benefit of enterprise risk management is the reduced deterrent effects of uncertainty. There is a cost of uncertainty to the organization, the cost of fear. Reducing that is a positive for the organization. Risk management reduces the deterrent effects of uncertainty about future accidental losses. It makes these losses less frequent, less severe, or more predictable. And there are many benefits in reducing our uncertainty. For example, it reduces fears about potential losses, it increases profit potential, and makes the organization a safer investment. If an organization's trying to raise capital, it's going to look for investors, and those investors are going to want to have some assurances that there's a risk management program in place that's going to protect the investors' capital against the cost of accidental losses. So let's do a couple of practice questions. David's a sole proprietor with no employees. Lately, he has become very concerned that the business will cease to exist if he becomes disabled. Which one of the following goals best describes his concern? And we have earning stability, reducing downside risk, social responsibility, and regulatory compliance. In this situation, his primary goal sounds like earning stability. All of these are valid goals of an organization. Many organizations have all of these as goals. But in this situation, becoming very concerned that the business will cease to exist, earning stability is a major concern. So A is our answer. JB Designs is a residential construction company that is trying to attract investors to expand its business. Which one of the following risk management objectives is critical for JB Designs in its endeavor to attract new investors? Satisfy legal and regulatory obligations, anticipate and recognize emerging risks, stabilize earnings, or reduce the deterrent effects of hazard risk. These are all important risk management objectives. For example, an organization always wants to satisfy legal and regulatory obligations and, of course, stabilize earnings. But when we discuss risk management objectives and their ability to help attract investors, the most important that we discussed before of all of these objectives is reduce the deterrent effect of hazard risk. That can make the company less vulnerable to hazard risk, less uncertainty, and that would be more attractive to investors. So D is our answer. Let's wrap up Module 2 by talking about various risk measures. Tools to measure risk are very important to risk professionals. These tools can help measure not only threats, but also opportunities for the organization. The commonly used risk measures are exposure, volatility, likelihood, consequences, time horizon, and correlation. Let's go through each one of these individually. The first risk measure is exposure. Exposure is any condition that presents a possibility of gain or loss. For example, if an insurance company writes a homeowner's insurance policy, that increases the insurance company's exposure to a fire loss that it would have to pay for. Exposure provides a measure of the maximum potential damage associated with an occurrence. Risk level generally increases as the exposure increases, assuming the risk is non-diversifiable. And if you remember, we talked about diversifiable risks and non-diversifiable risks. An example of a diversifiable risk is generally fire, whereas a non-diversifiable risk would include a natural disaster. And risk level generally increases as the exposure increases. For example, let's say an insurer writes a lot of policies, homeowners policies in coastal areas, then the exposure to windstorm would increase as the insurer's book of business grows. So if an insurance company is writing a lot of policies for coastal areas, then it's going to have increased exposure. Another risk measure is volatility. Volatility provides a basic measure that can be applied to risk outcomes. It represents the fluctuation in the price of an asset. Let's say that I purchase a stock and the average price of the stock over the last 4 years has been $10 per share. Well, that doesn't mean that the stock is not volatile. It can be very volatile or it may not be so volatile. Let's say that the reason the average price of the stock was $10 per share is because 4 years ago it was $9, then 3 years ago it was 11, then 9, and then 11 last year. That averages out to $10 a share, but there's very little volatility in the price movement. Alternatively, let's say the price for the last 4 years was 5, 15, 5, 15. Once again, the average price over the last 4 years is $10 a share, but there's a lot more volatility. It's a much bigger price fluctuation. The more volatility that we have in an asset, the more risk we have. Volatility can often be quantified. For example, in the case of a stock, volatility can be measured by calculating that stock's standard deviation. Another volatility measure for the overall stock market itself is the CBOE Volatility Index, or VIX. That measures overall volatility of the market. Likelihood is another risk measure. Likelihood is a qualitative estimate. You may want to highlight the word qualitative estimate of the certainty with which the outcome of an event can be predicted. This is a key measure in risk management. Likelihood and probability are often confused with each other, but they're not the same concept. Likelihood is different than probability because probability relies on the law of large numbers. And if you don't know what the law of large numbers is, it's a principle that says the larger the sample size, the more representative the probability of occurrence is of the whole. Let me give you an example. Let's say that I have a coin, I flip it twice. In that case, there's a pretty good likelihood it's going to wind up heads twice. If I only flip it twice, and let's say it winds up being heads twice, I might think, well, the probability of a coin flip winding up on heads is 100% because I don't have a large sample size. I only flip the coin twice. The law of large numbers says the more I flip that coin, the more likely it's going to wind up heads half the time and tails half the time. So let's say that I flip the coin 1 million times. Under the law of large numbers, most likely I'll have about 500,000 occurrences of heads and 500,000 occurrences of tails. Unfortunately, most organizations don't have the luxury of the law of large numbers. We don't have a large sample size with a lot of losses. So instead of dealing with probability, the organization has to deal with likelihood. Most organizations need to determine the likelihood of an occurrence without the benefit of a probability analysis. Another measure is consequences. Consequences are the effects of an occurrence, and they can be positive or negative. For example, if I invest in a stock, the consequences could be a total loss, it could be a massive gain, or anything in between. The measure of the degree to which an occurrence could positively or negatively affect an organization. The greater the consequences, the greater the risk. If there's a low likelihood of an occurrence with minor consequences, it may not be necessary to manage the risk. When we're trying to manage risks, figure out how to treat risks, we have to look at the likelihood and we have to look at the resultant consequences. In some cases, it doesn't even make any sense to try and manage the risk or treat the risk. For example, let's say that an accounting firm has a lot of supplies in the supply cabinet, and they determine that the likelihood of employees taking those supplies for personal use is relatively low. And of course, the consequences of the employees taking some supplies is also very low. There's not a big loss to be had there if somebody steals a few pencils. In that case where we have low likelihood and low consequences, the company may just choose not to manage that risk. It may not be practical to manage that risk. Risks with major consequences, such as a fire, though, should be managed even if the likelihood of a fire is low. Another measure is time horizon. Time horizon is estimated duration, and that can be measured in various ways. For example, with bonds, there's a time horizon calculation that actually is called duration. There's a way of calculating the duration of a bond. Longer time horizons are generally more risky than shorter time horizons. For example, for a bank, a 30-year mortgage is a lot more risky than a 15-year mortgage. An organization may not have any control over the time horizon of a risk. Diversification in financial investments can help manage those risks. One thing that an organization can do, if the organization, let's say, is an insurance company, what they can do is they can match the duration of their assets, in other words, when the assets are expected to mature, with the duration of the organization's liabilities, in other words, when the losses are supposed to be paid out. What insurance companies often do is they look at the duration of their assets and match those with the estimated duration of their liabilities in order to protect themselves from risk. And finally, we have correlation. Correlation is a relationship between variables, a measure that should be applied to the organization's overall risk portfolio. If losses from risks move in the same direction, the risks are correlated. So let's say that a bank decides to make mortgage loans only to employees of ABC Company. Those are the only mortgage loans that the bank makes. You have to be an employee of ABC Company to get a mortgage from this particular bank. In addition, this same bank only makes its business loans to ABC Company. Those risks are highly, highly correlated. Another example, let's say that a manufacturer only has two suppliers and they're both located in the same earthquake-prone area. That is a highly correlated risk as well. The greater the correlation, the greater the combined risk. So let's do a couple of practice questions. Which one of the following statements is correct regarding various risk measures? Volatility represents the effects, positive or negative, of an occurrence. Now, the effects of an occurrence represent a consequence, so A is false. B, correlation is a qualitative estimate of the certainty with which an outcome can be predicted. That's not correlation, that's likelihood. So B is false. C, exposure represents any condition that presents a possibility of gain or loss. C is correct. That is our answer. That is the definition of exposure. So C is the answer. D, time horizon is a relationship between variables. Correlation is a relationship between variables. So D is false. Once again, C is our answer. ABC Insurance is trying to expand its territory and has started offering discounts on homeowners and personal auto insurance to residents along the Gulf Coast. Which one of the following risk measures is most likely to increase as a result of this action? We have time horizon, volatility, correlation, and exposure. In this case, we do see probably some correlation here, but what's most likely to increase is their exposure, right? If they're writing a bunch of policies in the Gulf Coast and there's a lot of risk there, there's a lot of possibility for a major, major loss, that's going to substantially increase ABC Insurance Company's exposure. So D is our answer, and that concludes Module 2.